This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, Macca and Paul here to keep you entertained all the way through till midday. And our next guest, Macca, is on the line.
Yes, good morning to Bruce Wolpe. Bruce is a regular on the show, and we always look forward to this. Senior Fellow at the United States Study Centre. Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Paul, Macca, good morning to you. And great to be back.
We wanted to first off ask you, there's been a lot of discussion, a lot of comment about entering the US as a tourist or a business person or whatever. I mean, reality is, there's always been, you know, surveillance and questioning at the border. It's now at an enhanced level and it's getting more publicity. What's your feeling on this, Bruce? Now, you know, when did you last travel to the US?
I traveled in February and at the end of next week going back again for a couple of months.
Well, hopefully.
But I'm a U.S. born in the U.S. U.S. citizen, also an Australian citizen.
So
I don't. There are no issues that I. Well, I know plenty of issues, but none they're going to get me on.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, you don't know.
You're going to be the first call when I'm detained.
Oh, okay. We'll put you live to air. This is Bruce Wolpe speaking to us from an immigration facility somewhere.
Have a home in Colorado. We have a gay Jewish governor. I mean, what's the problem?
Oh, here, you're in trouble. You're in trouble.
But a lot of just casual conversations with a lot of people in a lot of places here in Australia.
Yeah.
Australians are worried about traveling to the U.S. and they're worried about the ICE, you know, the customs people, immigration and customs enforcement. Going through social media history, they know who's coming into the country because you have to register your details to get a visa and so forth, and even before you get on the plane.
Yeah, so they know that people have been, you know, they're already looking, or the artificial intelligence is looking. And potentially. So
and they target people, and even if no crime has been committed, they can just say we don't want you in the country, and there's almost no appeal of it. There's no due process. There's no hearing. Nothing, and so Australians can find themselves on a plane back to Sydney or Melbourne in 12 hours.
Yes, I know.
So, Bruce, let's get on.
It's really distressing. It's terrible.
It's not a great sign.
You see what happens at Harvard, at Columbia University.
Yes.
They just released the guy from Columbia University this morning here, and no charges. Been detained since March, and now he's may face a court proceeding, but he's not under arrest.
Yeah.
Or anything like that, and they monster these people with excessive force. They're masked. I mean, how's that for open government? And it's a very distressing situation that more people are getting attuned to.
Can I ask you, Bruce? You know, these sort of actions, you know, within the U.S. or at the border, and some of these raids, and we've seen the reaction, you know, from Donald Trump and the federal government. You know, clearly you speak to lots and lots of Americans across the spectrum. What are people saying to you about this? Are they concerned about the use of, one, the National Guard without the governor agreeing, but also the deployment of the military in almost law enforcement activity? What are people saying to you?
Well, they're talking to me, but the polling information is really interesting as well. As a general principle, control of the borders, you know, which Trump makes the centerpiece of his presidency, that's relatively popular.
Yeah.
And not dissimilar to here in Australia. I mean, how many years has it been since John Howard said, we can control who enters this country and the basis on which they come into Australia?
Yeah.
And it's bipartisan and so forth. So that theme is working in the United States, and I would say that's where most voters are comfortable with it. But when you get to specifics, separation of families, detention of people, soldiers, National Guard in the streets, and then the armed forces in the streets, people get much more anxious about it, and they are decidedly unpopular. So, yes, they want a secure border, but no, they don't want the show of force that we saw in Los Angeles a couple of weeks ago. And I think many people are concerned. There's a distinction between the National Guard, which are citizens of the state who participate in the program and they're available for emergency services, and the armed forces, you know, permanent members of the Army and so forth, Marines. I think people are very wary about the deployment of those of armed forces into cities. But I think it's clear from Trump's history, his rhetoric, the parade in Washington last Saturday of the 250th anniversary of the Army, that Trump is inclined, if he has an ability to do it, and there's a reason that he sees to do it, to put the armed forces in the streets of American cities in order to suppress dissent and people assembling to express their views.
Yeah, it is deeply concerning. But Americans, I mean, they vote, you know, a majority of Americans voted for Trump. Polls are saying yes, particularly on border issues. There's very, very broad support. I suppose that, you know, the parallel, or, you know, for us in Australia, we have an official opposition. In the US, it doesn't operate the same as that. You know, there isn't effectively an opposition leader in the US. So the voice, you know, the voices against the president, you know, there are so many of them, and it's not really united. But I wanted to ask you, so Donald Trump, his spokesperson has said, she said this came directly from his lips, that he's going to wait, you know, he's got 2 weeks to decide whether or not he's going to involve the US military in Iran. Why 2 weeks? Does he want to see if diplomacy will work? What's the reason?
Look, it can cut two ways, but whenever he faces a difficult situation, like is Putin really serious about trying to settle the war in Ukraine? He says, well, we'll know in about 2 weeks really what his intentions are. So whenever he faces trade tariffs, what are you going to do on tariffs? Well, in 2 weeks, we'll be able to figure out whether we want to have higher or lower tariffs against China. So he uses it as a formulation to delay and to let things, as he says, play out. But how they ultimately resolve, we don't know. We do know this, though. When he said he would settle the war in Ukraine, it's not settled. When
it's one day. 24 hours. 24 not, hours.
Yeah, 150 times 24 hours later, here we are. And he said he'd do something on Gaza. That hasn't happened. Iran, obviously. And trade agreements, almost nil. So he has these intentions, but they're never carried out. So he's failed across the board in those areas.
Yeah.
So and that's pretty important stuff. I think on Thursday, the sentiment was, because his statements were so bellicose, unconditional surrender,
yes,
and other such things. And you know, I decided not to kill Khamenei, the supreme leader.
Yes.
I decided not to kill him. Very nice. On Thursday, I thought that, yes, he is going to join the Israeli campaign. But then after he said, no, we're going to wait 2 weeks and just examine it a little bit further and see what's underway, my feeling is he's having a lot of hesitation about it. Some of it is internal Republican dissent against him, the MAGA movement, the pro-Trump, ultra-Trump crowd that he has inside the Republican Party.
Yeah.
He campaigned on being a peacemaker, but B, not to get involved in the forever wars and not to fight another war like in the Middle East. And to those people who are really, really upset about it, that's what they see coming, and they don't like it, and they're expressing their view.
Yeah,
Trump says, I am MAGA. I invented MAGA.
That's
if
right.
If I say it's okay, it's okay. You know. So there are two takes on this 2 weeks. One, that he is really uncertain on political terms, and then carrying out the mission. And then secondly, is it a pretext for having the Iranians lower their guard? So actually the Americans are going to go in relatively soon with the powerhouse bomb that they have.
Because he said he said it's within 2 weeks. He didn't say it will be in 2 weeks.
And no, he said it could be at any time up to 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you?
That's right.
And I mean, you know, the bunker busting bombs, And one of them won't do it. There'll need to be a number of them. You need to keep making the hole bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, you destroy the entrance, and then you have another bomb that goes deeper, and then another one that goes deeper on that to reach, 400, 500 feet underground, under a mountain.
But to
get this done.
Perhaps someone should suggest to him, well, perhaps if there is something down there, the Iranians might have moved it. And we have.
Or you just bury in place, let it be.
So Bruce, does this mean that Trump is having a problem trying to balance off domestic policies and international policies? And do you think the workload of having those two really big things flaring up at the same time is causing problems to the administration?
Yes. I mean, all of a sudden his presidency is on the line. Until the Iran bombing started, even with the inability to close the major deals he wanted to close, and in Ukraine and Gaza and so forth, even with that, he was leading, he was by command, his agenda was clear, he completely dominated issues, completely dominated the media, as you say, no opposition leader among the Democrats in Congress. He had his hands firmly on the grasping the presidency. All of a sudden, because of possible war with Iran and the fate of his domestic policy legislation, which is facing headwinds from the Republican Party, it's just not there yet. Well, if he fails at either or both of those, that's a real setback for his presidency.
I think that
explains this hesitation here.
It's not clear
he knows exactly what he's doing.
He's just realized being president's a bit difficult.
But he feels he has absolute power, that he can just do these things. Yeah. But what he's dealing with right now is very, very difficult.
Yeah. Wanted to ask you a final question or two, Bruce. AUKUS, what's your take? Do you think AUKUS is secure? Our previous guest, Jennifer Parker, adjunct fellow, Naval Studies, University of New South Wales, told us about the three steps of AUKUS, the HMS Stirling in Western Australia, the ability for US and UK subs, nuclear subs, to provision and turn around out of there, then the building of the subs in the US subsequent to that, and then ultimately building some in the UK and Australia. How do you see it playing out? Should we as Australians be concerned about whether or not this is really going to happen?
Sure, because A, it is so big and so expensive and really profoundly different in order of magnitude of the weapons, the submarines that are being constructed. It's a really, really big project. And I do think, though, even though Albanese did not get a meeting with Trump, and he's been, there's been a lot of angst about that. There shouldn't be angst about it at all, but it will occur in good time. But Starmer did sit down with Trump, and it sounded like he got a pretty firm commitment from Trump. Yes, we want to proceed with AUKUS. Now, Albanese can test that, and others can test that, but I thought that was a good sign. Yeah. Starmer also made progress on tariffs with the UK, not on steel, but on aluminium, and that's a promising thing. So some of the ground has been laid out, and so far so good. But Trump's modus operandi, when he looks at anything that anyone else did, including Joe Biden, who initiated AUKUS with the UK and Scott Morrison. He always likes to go to those deals and say, oh, how can it be better for America first and American interest? So I would still expect Trump wanting to rewrite some of the deal for more favorable commercial terms for the United States.
They can always be more favorable.
Right. And how much that can Australia tolerate given the amazing, the huge cost of this project as it stands today before money has really been spent.
Yeah, I know. Unfortunately, Bruce, we're out of time. Next time we're going to make it two segments if we can.
And we end on an upbeat.
Well, we had a question, why are there so many illegal immigrants into the US? And I think one of the reasons is the US is very different to Australia in that it has an extremely long land border with a couple of countries.
Asylum policy, which is permeable, and a lot of people want to come to the U.S. to escape their seeking asylum from terrible things happening in their country.
Yeah, and if we had a big...
And America was built on immigration.
And if we had a big land border like that, we'd be in the same situation.
Yeah. We have a water border.
Yeah.
There you go.
Thanks again, Bruce. Really appreciate your time and your work.
Thank you. We'll talk again soon.
And we'll have you on again soon. We've been speaking with Bruce Walpe, Senior Fellow at the United States Study Center. You are on Saturday Magazine with Macca and Paul. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.